Hey everybody, welcome to the Green Architects Lounge podcast. I'm your host, Chris Briley.
I'm your host, Phil Kaplan. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Phil. How you doing?
I'm a little warm today. It's summertime.
It is summertime, but we here in Maine were really lucky compared to the rest of the country. I mean, hasn't this weekend been like the most gorgeous weather ever?
It's been perfect. It's been absolutely perfect.
Maine is perfect, isn't it?
We think so, right?
Yeah.
Well, the thing to remember is that sun is good.
That's right. It's sunny here. People think it's cold, but it's nice and sunny.
And what are we talking about today?
We're talking about PV solar.
That's right. So using that sun. Appreciate the sun. Worship it, baby.
Yeah, my skin. Not this weekend, but last weekend, I got myself a good old burn. I do that once a year.
Yeah, you're a little...
Unfair.
Fair. That was a nice way to put it.
Yeah, you're fair. I'm very Caucasian. Yeah, yes. My ancestors all hailed from the Caucasus Mountains.
You certainly are, my friend.
Yes. Okay, so Phil, before we launch ourselves into the PV, we're going to celebrate with cocktails. And
what are we celebrating?
I'll tell you, and those of you who pay attention to this show, Allison, all your... Oh, that's the ice.
Doesn't it sound good?
Yes, it does. Allison Bales in our last podcast surprised us with news that we've become full-fledged advisors for the Green Building Advisors. So here's to you, buddy. Congratulations.
Cheers to you, too. Mm-mm. Thank you, GBA. It's been a fun run. We're very excited to be formal advisors here.
Yeah, which, you know what that means. Now we have to tune in more and comment more and all that. We have to...
Oh, now we only pretend like we care. So right. Now we actually have to do something.
You know, we chime in occasionally, but now we're expected to step it up, so...
No prob.
Right.
We're psyched.
Yeah. Piece of cake.
That's an awesome crew.
All right, so when we... here's what's happening with the cocktail. Imagine me coming... I'm going to Phil's house. We're going to sit down and talk about the outline. I walk in. It's just Phil. Kids are gone. He is a sweaty mess because he just bikes back in the heat. And he's like, we're having cocktails, right? I'm like, yeah, we are. And so we didn't start with this cocktail. Well, I don't want to portray like we drank a lot, but...
We started with water.
Right, that's right. But you were making a homemade... Well, let's just do this cocktail.
That's right. We'll save that cocktail for the next one.
So we got all inventive because we were feeling pretty creative and all that jazz. And so we raided your alcohol cabinet. Oh. And I'm gonna pitch this one to you, Phil, because it's your ingredients that really made this happen.
And it was pretty amazing what we found.
Yeah.
I think it was more than luck. I think it was divine inspiration.
I do, too. This is heavenly. But so this is a Green Architects Lounge original cocktail recipe, which we'll donate to the people at Fine Cooking for a wonderful thing to try out. So, Phil, tell us about our ingredients.
The showdown, Chris. We're calling it the showdown.
Showdown.
Do you know why? You know why.
Well, I do, but you tell everyone else.
It's a showdown between sweet and bitter.
That's right.
Bitter and sweet.
And what wins?
It's kind your of mouth.
Like, yeah.
What loses?
I'm winning.
Your liver.
All right. Oh, yeah. That poor, poor liver. Okay. Hang in there, buddy.
All right. So, essentially... Take half a lemon.
Yeah.
Ciroc vodka, two ounces, or two parts.
Yeah.
Grand Marnier, one part. There's the sweet.
Okay.
And one part Campari.
Yeah.
Delicious Italian bitters. I love it. It's really so refreshing if you haven't had it in your summer drinks.
Right.
The key is Stirling's Blood Orange Bitters.
I know. And see, now
give them a shout out. Right, half now, part of that.
Now, kids, don't. Don't freak out because that's like, I don't have that ingredient. You can have this exact same drink without it. We tried it just to, because we knew that's what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. Then we added the bitters and we both looked at each other and go, oh.
That's good stuff.
That is so much better.
Yeah.
So special shout out to Stirling's and we'll send you a link to how you can get this. I think we can. So that's free advertising because we're enjoying these drinks so much. So
great summer drink, refreshing, citrusy. Not too sweet, not too bitter.
Right.
Nice mix.
Nice. It's a little pinkish in hue, so you don't look too manly, but we don't care because we're secure.
So before we get on with talking about solar, and we're going to start with the basics.
That's right.
So we're going to end up with the song. It's by a band called Beechwood Sparks. They've been around for a while. They haven't put out an album in about 6 years. I went the opposite of Brooklyn this time, Chris. They're from L.A.
Good for you.
It is from their new album called The Tarnished Gold.
Nice.
And it's about as sun-soaked as you can get. It's a really, really pretty song. Imagine lying on the beach and kind of waking up hearing the surf and as your eyes gently open.
I so need that. You know, I'm listening to that stuff more and more. You were playing it while we were working on this before we pressed play, and I was loving it. I've never heard of these guys before that, so thank you, Phil.
Sure. The song's called Earl Jean, and we'll close out with that.
All right.
And we're going to start up with some of the basics.
Some of the basics.
Tell
okay.
us, Chris. Where are we going first?
Well, first thing to clear up is, and I'll say part two, we're going to get into the money. Because that's where everybody's like, get to it. But before we get there, this is the primer. This is, because, you know, you've been there. I know you've been there, and I've been there, mm-hmm. where you start thinking about, all right, I'm getting green. I'm getting into the PVs. And you start talking to people, and immediately it starts falling into, you know, kilowatts, kilowatt hours, BTUs, and watts on the roof, and, you know, square footage of PV. And pretty soon, you know, you realize you need to get a handle on how much PV, you know, how much you need and how much output you're going to get, and et cetera, et cetera. And that's where we're going to get to with this part. So first off, I mean, people should know we're talking about photovoltaic solar cells. We're not generating heat. That's solar thermal. We've covered mm-hmm. that before.
That's right.
So we're going to try not to get too bogged down in the solar thermal. We're focused on generating electricity on site, critical for net zero.
That's right. So not solar thermal, not solar hot water.
Electricity.
Just for electricity.
Right.
And it's taken us a while to get here, actually, because this is not the low-hanging fruit.
No.
It's not.
And it's decades of research and pounding the drum and pounding the pavement and putting solar panels on the White House and then electing a guy who takes them off the White House, that type of thing. Let's not get too much into politics, although I don't know how we're going to keep from doing that near the end, but...
But the point is that this is still an important discussion that continues to evolve over time as incentives arrive and disappear and cost of energy fluctuates.
Right.
It's not the no-brainer like a lot of the things we talk about. So
right. So let's get into it. So like a regular PV panel. Okay, real quick. I mean, you know, I'm going to gloss over this because I have to, because I'm not a physicist and I don't want to, you know, be wrong, you know. Completely wrong, but basically you've got silica cells. You've got like an N side and a P side. They're coated with different things. I'm gonna get myself in a lot of trouble.
You keep going. You continue to impress me. You are much smarter than you look at the moment.
Well, really? Well, yeah. Yes. I'm not looking. I need a haircut. Yeah. So, basically, you've created a. You've got two wafer thin types of silica right next to each other. Between them. There is metal. There's like this little metal pin. So like as sun hits one side of your PV, you know, that energy is turned into heat and some of it's bounced right back in light. But there's a little percentage of it, and we'll say 20% because mm-hmm. we're going to get there, mm-hmm. that is actually converted into free electrons. They're trying to get to that other silica cell on the other side. And then mm-hmm. they do that by running into that piece of metal. And then where those two pieces of metal come together, we attach our wires, we rob that free electron, we'll say, we'll take that, thank mm-hmm. you.
You're
and
welcome.
That's how we generate electricity. And boy, physicists, you can write us at GA Lounge at greenbuildingadvisor.com and tell me
how you botched that. I think that was outstanding, Chris. So tell me about the 20%. So that is our efficiency, is that correct?
That's right. In fact, you'd say 20%. Wow, that is really low. Well, you're right. It is really mm-hmm. low. But, you know, try getting electricity from anything else right now. You're not igniting something. That's photons hitting a cell, and you're converting 20% of that into electricity. Not too shabby, but we could do better. And that's what mm-hmm. anyone is in the solar business, that's sort of the holy grail, is to improve that efficiency to a point where it just knocks everything else out of the mm-hmm. out of the water.
And that's, in some ways, the understory about what we're talking about today, that everything we're talking about compares things at the moment.
Right.
Things are going to get better. Technology is going to get better.
That's right, as they have.
And these things are going to get cheaper.
That's right.
So there's no question whether or not we're going in the right direction here. So
exactly.
Keep that in the back of your mind while we talk about the ifs and the maybes.
Right. In fact, it's safe to say, in fact, we're going to provide a nice little slide.
Yeah, this is a great slide, Chris. I love this one.
Yeah, so this slide that we're going to provide is, it's basically what it's showing is the amount of available energy from the sun, or actually from every, you know, known real resource of energy. And the thing to remember is it's divided into two parts. Over to the right is your finite sources, as in, as you chip away at these numbers, it will run out.
Coal, petroleum, natural gas.
Uranium. Exactly. We're going to run out.
I'm already out of uranium, actually.
Yeah.
I've got none left.
None left in your house?
No. Well. Big party last weekend.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I used it up.
Right, all those x-rays.
That's right. Yeah. Right.
Anyway, but on the other side, on the left side, you got your renewables. And you'll notice this massive yellow, conveniently colored thing that represents the solar energy that hits our planet every year. Now, if you also look at the very, very far left, there's what, in 2009, the whole world consumed in energy. So you look at that, and then you also have tides, geothermal, hydro, biomass, OTEC, which is ocean thermal energy conversion. That's another, in fact, I don't even think we'll ever podcast on that. That's newer physics.
But again, you sound smart, because I didn't know OTEC.
Oh, well, thank you, Phil.
You've overcome your haircut once again, Chris.
I know.
Nice job.
I know. Well, you folks can't see me, but I have horn-rimmed glasses with a piece of tape in the middle.
You may as
well.
Pocket
protector. No, I don't. But anyway, if you look at that thing, you'll see 23,000 tetrawatts per year. Woohoo! In a nutshell, that's way more than we need. So really, we need to tap that, because it's a long story short. Solar is a very abundant energy source that we really need to get out there and tap. So let's get to it. So when you have your solar panel on your roof, you are generating DC.
That's right.
Which is direct current.
And we need to switch that over to AC.
Right. And the reason is because your house is, you know, that's here in the States, AC is it's the electricity that cycles 60 times per second, so that your reflexes, you know, when you have that moment when you shock yourself, your reflexes can actually kick in, as opposed to clamping down on something instead and then killing yourself. So so that's why AC took off. Well, actually, the real reason AC took, now I'm going to really geek out. Brace yourself.
All right, I'm ready.
Have your drink. The real reason is because with AC, you can step down and step up. In fact, you know, I'm going to go way out there. Maybe this will get edited out. But, you know about the war between Tesla and Edison? Edison, I'll tell you.
Tell me.
Edison, he's the DC guy, you know.
Right.
So he was championing the whole direct current. And he had the patent on it. And he was trying to market it and get it out there. And Tesla, who actually worked for Edison but got stiffed by him or whatever, he was working on alternating current. Now, he was the real physicist as opposed to the real sales dude. And he's the guy who figured out, you know, you can run this current through a transformer, step down the amps, boost the voltage, and now you can send it miles and miles and miles without resistance. Whereas DC, you had to have a station every mile, everywhere, ever. But... But Edison, he hung on for a long time electrocuting animals and even an elephant.
That's right, I heard that.
Yeah, to show that, you can, it's safer, it's not safer. Look, we killed this elephant. What a jerk. Anyway.
What a jerk.
So, to do that, Phil, you need an inverter in your house.
I've seen those inverters. It's essentially a box that's about, I don't know, what do you say, 2 feet by 1 foot or so?
Sure.
Sticks out maybe three, about 6 inches or so?
Sure.
Yeah, so that's the thing that you see inside the house.
Right.
You're going to have one of those.
Right, if you're tied to the grid.
If you're tied to the grid.
Okay, so one of the myths that you have, and this is the most frustrating thing, is that when the power goes out, the power still goes out, even if you have these beautiful photovoltaic cells up there. Why? Because you're grid-tied. We're talking about a grid-tied system. So that you're converting DC into AC, and you're putting it back in the grid, or you're using it right there. But so like when you're doing the passive house, we talked about that, how you don't get credit for that because you're sending it out. It's all about energy demand. So you send it out to the world and you get back. So if your power company does net metering, then essentially you're putting it in the bank, aren't you?
That's right. Basically, it's running your meter backwards.
Yes, so, which it actually does.
Yeah. Yeah. So it takes your meter and it's the net readings from your meter.
Right.
So it has to do with your consumption. You consume a certain amount, and then you produce a certain amount.
Exactly.
So the net production and consumption is where you end up. So you're allowed to get that back.
Exactly. So, and perhaps you might even have 2 meters, one measuring one direction, one measuring the other. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to write in and tell us that. Mm-hmm. We set it.
So here's one of the other big questions, Chris.
Yes.
So suddenly your power goes out.
Yes.
What happens to your solar? Can't you just make power? You can't do it.
Yeah, you can't.
Yeah, absolutely can't do it. Right. It seems dumb. It seems like somebody should have resolved that right now. And the issue has to do with safety. If somebody's fixing your lines, so suddenly the current doesn't run
it's
back
a beautiful
through those
sunny
lines.
Day, and you're feeding that thing with a current from a direction that the guy working on it, everything shut off. Frank, is it all shut off? Yeah, it is. And you go, and somebody does something, and boom, there's a big spike in power still lingering in that thing. So,
So for now, if you really want to do off the grid, you have to rely on batteries.
Right, and that's part of the inverter's job too. There's some safety precautions so that when the power goes out, it disconnects you from the grid completely. So, and remains aware for when your power comes back on, and it will come back on. So. With net metering, the power company is never going to send you a check and say, wow, you guys gave us, so many more kilowatts this year. Thanks a lot. Here's $200.
Right.
That's not going to happen.
You think that'll ever happen?
Possibly with the feed-in tariffs.
Right.
Exactly.
Which is happening in a lot of other countries.
Exactly. And that's one thing a lot of we in the green community... Mm-hmm. Think is a positive thing because it goes towards behavior and also little recognition that, if imagine every house generating its own electricity and feeding a grid that is, amoebic, they're sort of like power stations are now, they're not generating necessarily, they're regulating, they are administering and making sure that all the lines are, all the right currents and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's,
So let's think of an easy way to explain a feed-in tariff.
Sure.
I'll take a pass at it. So essentially, it's a long-term contract intended to stimulate renewable energy, and it actually offers renewable energy at a higher rate than actual currents. Actual energy is
right.
costing. I flubbed that a little bit, but
a little bit. But the point is that we're generating an incentive for you to, you could actually make money. Well, it's gonna be hard for you to make money, but you can actually contribute to the power generation of your local community,
right?
For feed-in tariffs and get paid to do it.
That's right. So if we say that right now electricity costs 15 cents a kilowatt hour,
right?
You could actually sell back your renewably generated electricity. Say it was from solar for like 30 cents a kilowatt hour.
Right.
So suddenly that starts making it worth it economically.
Very much. So that is there's a lot of work that has, from a municipal level, that has to happen to make that, do that.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some basic numbers here. Because
All right.
One of the things that's a struggle, especially for architects, we're supposed to be like somewhere between the art and the engineering world, is that right?
Exactly.
In the math world?
Exactly.
It's still a struggle because we're kind of floating out. We're floaty folks, us architects.
Sure.
But really trying to get a handle on these numbers is pretty critical.
Sure.
So let's talk about some rules of thumb, some numbers that we're using right now.
All right.
All right. So each kilowatt of grid-tight solar produces about 1,300 kilowatt hours per year. That's the number I use.
Right.
We get a range between 1,200 and 1,400.
Right. We should say that's a New England number,
mm-hmm.
right? So, and it's pretty sunny here, but we are northern.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you get down into, if you're like in Phoenix,
right.
Arizona.
You're up to like 1,600 plus, I think. And Seattle is under 1,000.
That's right.
So we're kind of the Midland range.
Right. So maybe we're the perfect people to be doing this.
That's right.
This podcast.
Right,
so all right. So then let's try and understand that, Phil. So
mm-hmm.
so we're saying for each kilowatt mm-hmm. grid tied power, you're going to get a certain kilowatt hours,
right.
which is 1,300 kilowatt hours per year. So the reason why we're converting that is because what's the electric company going to bill you for?
Kilowatt hours.
So
That's
it's like how many watts per hour you're using, and
and we know how much. We pay per kilowatt hour. Most people have a sense of what that is.
Right. So oftentimes, solar panels are talked about in kilowatts, as in what they generate. while they're, you know, in the sun. And that's, you know, that's a squishy number because the sun is constantly setting and moving through different mm-hmm. seasons. So that's why that number is often really hard to pin down. So knowing that you have, when you bought this system and it says, you know, it's a, you have a kilowatt of power on your roof, then you can figure, oh, I'm going to be, I'm going to have about 1300 kilowatt hours in a year.
So right. So that's the first thing we do. Maybe can make that conversion quickly. Remember, figure out how much you're making in your region.
Right.
And know 1 kilowatt equals X number of kilowatt hours. And you can start speaking a lot more intelligently about these things.
Right. And here's, and we'll help you out, everyone, because we, there's a great slide.
I think it's pvwatts.com is, yeah. Is the site that gives you the information.
Yeah. And basically, it's a great map that, I don't know what year it's from, but it's essentially shows you what everyone pays per kilowatt hour per state. And of course, that's, certain states are divided up in different territories, so you might have different numbers, but in general, this is pretty good. And you look at it, and man, what a range, right, Phil? I mean, if we were in California, here, electricity is very expensive up here in Maine. We're not burning coal. It's all hydro and oil, really, that we burn. Mm-hmm. So we're at 0.09 cents per kilowatt hour, whereas, you know, let's take Wyoming at 6 cents a kilowatt hour. It's going to take a while for the PV salesman to start convincing people there, because already, you know, that's you know, we pay twice what they do
for
electricity.
And the second part of the episode, we're going to talk more specifics about where we think the limits are for PV right now and
right.
where they're going to be in a short period of time.
Right. So if I take my 1,300 kilowatt hours, right, mm-hmm. and I look at Maine over there at 13.09 cents, so I go times 0.1309. I'm looking at basically $170. So 1 kilowatt of solar on my roof here in Maine mm-hmm. should yield me the equivalent of $170 worth of electricity. Mm-hmm. Boom. So
yeah. So now you can start figuring out what these things cost and your return on investment.
On your investment, right there. Anyone can do it. Mm-hmm. All the data is right there. So the other thing to start thinking about is, well, as designers, Phil, and builders and general guys, is like, well, how much does the average home, you know, we just figured out what you'd yield, but what was the average customer, need for mm-hmm. electricity?
Right. Well, you know, it's one of the things that the geeks for a long time have owned this conversation, and the architects are slow to get on board. But we have to understand, we have to get on top of these things as we begin to design. For a while now, our tribe has been on top of certain metrics, like, for instance, how much glass we're going to have on the south side.
Right.
Or at least we have an intuitive sense of this.
Right.
Now, when we start to design our roofs, or even the south face,
right,
we have to start thinking about how much space we're going to leave. Again, we have an intuitive sense about structure.
Right.
We have an intuitive sense about glass and shading and things like that. But
it's time to get an intuitive sense of what it would take to start generating power from our own roofs.
Right.
Or
You know what? You could always put your power out in a pole. You could
That's right. Pole. That's right. But shouldn't we plan for that then? And we should know, as opposed to like driving up and going, oh, what's that? Oh, power pole right here. Oh, this is all the space we had on the side.
It's a missed opportunity. You know, it just drives me nuts. To me, right. It's like you're giving a landscape architect an opportunity to design your landscape. Right. And then he says, "Oh yeah, the garden. We're going to put the garden up on a pole."
Right.
Right. And you have a ladder to get up there, and then you can put your garden up there because right. I had beautiful paving and these berms and these flower beds. And,
design this beautiful garden. And there's no room.
Right.
Let's
right.
put it on a pole.
Come on. Let's think about this ahead of time. It's our responsibility.
Exactly.
We know it now. We know which way we're moving with this. Solar is inevitable.
So here's a good assignment. You know, professors, have your kids. You know, have that second, third year student, whatever, mm-hmm. Integrate elegantly. You know, here, give them an array of PV panels and say, you know, the one facet of this project is that these have to be integrated in a aesthetically pleasing manner. Mm-hmm. And then judge them harshly.
That's right. Like we were.
Exactly.
Can you tell we were scarred?
Yes. Well, if you're not scarred, you mm-hmm. know.
So this isn't really a podcast about net zero, but in some way that's where we're all headed.
Right.
We're going to need to know. We're going to need to be able to generate all of our own energy on our property.
Right.
So how much energy is that?
And how, right.
bigger roof do we need?
Because you're gonna have that client that's gonna say, how much do I need? Mm-hmm. Well, if you take the average U.S. residential utility customer, this is from the EIA, which is the Energy Information Administration, which is part of the U.S. Department of Energy. Mm-hmm. They say that the 2010 your average consumer consumed 11,496 kilowatt hours, mm-hmm. and that equals it out to about 958 kilowatt hours per month.
Mm-hmm. So if we did the math and we said, all right, you got your calculator, Chris?
I do, as a matter of fact.
Right. So let's say 11,500 kilowatt hours, okay?
Yeah.
Divided by the average of 1,300 kilowatt hours per year.
Right. Well, Phil, I get 8.8.
So 8.8 kilowatts. We just did it.
That wasn't
so hard, right?
Right. So if I want to take care of 100% of my total load energy consumption,
electricity consumption.
Thank you, Phil. Yep. And I need 8.8 kilowatts up there. So mm-hmm. you get a 9-kilowatt system.
Right, 9 kilowatts. So that's a pretty big roof.
Yes, it is.
So now if you use a rule of thumb.
Yes.
And this is from our friend Fortunato over at Revision.
Yeah.
His estimate is 110 square feet per kilowatt.
Right. So then I take my 8.8 and I say times 110. So, Phil, dude,
yes.
I need 973 square feet of PV to take care of 100% of my load if I'm an average house in the United States.
All right, so stay with us now, okay?
Okay.
So we're going to take that 973
yes.
square feet, and let's say we've got a 32-foot wide house. We're going for an even module.
Okay.
It's 32 by 32 or so. If we multiply that up by 2.5 stories, it gives us about 2,500 square feet, plus or minus. It's an average American home. So trust me on this one. Let's say
I divide
that by 32 and see what we get.
All right, so 30.
Look at that. That's a big roof.
That's 32 feet by 30 feet.
Yeah.
That is a big roof.
Yeah, that's like a 12 and 16 pitch. Or 12 and 14 pitch.
Dang, Phil.
Yeah, so it's not going
to
work. It's going
to
be a little weird.
Planning things. If I'm going to do 100, that's 100, taking 100% of an average house.
That's right.
So here in Maine, like the average house, though, is 6,000 as opposed to 11,000 kilowatt hours. But in a way, that's unfair because we have a much shorter cooling season. A lot of places don't have air conditioning. Mm-hmm. Anyway. So, but we'll talk about that more later with how we're supplementing heat or not supplementing heat.
So one quick point to that, Chris and I, we just pointed out that this is electricity, not energy.
That's exactly right.
So if you're using fossil fuels, say now to heat your hot water.
Yeah,
that's right.
Or, I mean, you know, maybe some people still use it to heat their homes.
Right, or maybe we're using solar hot water to heat the...
Right, or you could use solar hot water. That's right. And if you don't use that, we're finding that you're going to need about another... maybe 4 kilowatts or more of PV to make up for the solar hot water.
Exactly. So as a designer, and you and I, of course, our approach is to reduce at the very beginning because we already know that this, we're looking at big numbers. We could, if we're good at all the other things we've talked about and podcasted about, we can turn that 8.8 into 4.4. You know, we can do something.
That's right.
You know, we can have a smaller system. We can pay less there, but we're going to spend it more on the envelope. And we're going to use more for solar, passive solar and all that. So.
That's right.
So are you feeling okay? Did we get through all that? Or do you want to talk about converting BTUs to... we don't have to. Basically, anyone, 1 kilowatt hour equals 3,412 BTUs. Mm-hmm. But... that's not a straight conversion because how are you converting that, Phil? Are you using a heat pump? If so, then your COP and
changes all that.
Changes, so maybe you get twice that in BTU.
Mm-hmm.
Oh boy!
But at some point we're gonna need that conversion because we are on a regular basis now, especially in our energy models, are talking BTUs per square foot per year.
That's right.
And you and I have been talking BTUs per square foot per year as a general energy metric.
Right. And what we're always doing, you and I, is converting that through the heat pump that we, or whatever system we're getting, into kilowatt hours so we can figure all that out in terms of electricity generation because we're not burning fossil fuels on site much anymore.
That's right. Now watch your units. Chris, how did you do in physics in high school?
I was great, but I was lousy with the units. That's what I always had.
Watch
my
your
numbers
units.
Are fantastic, but the units, that little red... ink on the side of units.
They always get you, don't they?
They always get you, and they'll get you in this one. You've got watts, kilowatts, kilowatt hours. BTUs. Uh-huh. Oh my gosh. Where's my cocktail?
But stay with it, because you can do it. Because if we can do it,
right?
We're kind of slow.
Well, we're.
I'm just talking after the showdown, Chris.
Okay, after the showdown, we are a little slow. Yeah. But so listen up, everybody. That's going to say part. Well, you feel good. Part one, basics. That was basic.
I feel excellent.
Okay. Now we kind of got a sense for what house needs, what we need to put on the roof, and now let's talk about making it economically feasible, justifiable, and relating that to a client when they walk through the door.
Excellent.
All right. So, hey, everybody, stay tuned. As a quick reminder, you can catch us on our own Facebook page, our lame Facebook page that we try to... Oh, it's shameful. Maybe you shouldn't go there. No, go there. Go there. You can also find us on iTunes and, of course, greenbuildingadvisor.com. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Thank you.
That's it for this part of the episode. Be sure to tune in next week for more from the Green Architects Lounge podcast. A quick reminder that our theme music is Zelda's theme from Perez Prado, and that the views and drinking habits of the hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Green Building Advisor. Thanks for tuning in, everyone, and keep up the good work.